following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this January 28th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz, and you got me for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. A beautiful day in the Auburn Opelika area. Sun is shining. Is it a little warmer outside? Maybe, kind of, compared to what it's been. And I think it's supposed to get even warmer throughout the rest of the week. So enjoy that. We had snow last week, and we're going to hit 70 this week. Welcome to the state of Alabama. Lots to talk about, though, on the show today. We've got tons of college basketball, some high school basketball, some major college football things to get into as we already have predictions for the 2025 college football playoff. We have predictions for the national champion, which is sort of absurd to think about, but it's the truth. So we'll have all that for you today and a whole lot more. Excited because Tuesdays are one of our more wide open days, right? We don't have any scheduled guests on these days. It's just you, me, and whatever is on your mind. And of course, me now be joined full time, in case you missed the announcement yesterday, the voice of Lee Scott, Christian Griffin in the studio as well, full time co-host, my man. Happy Tuesday. How's the voice holding up over there?
I was about to say, you said the voice of Lee Scott Academy. It's more like the half voice or the quarter voice.
The name.
That's all that about we have left.
The broadcaster.
Yeah. Something like that. No, doing well, excited to be a part of everything. Definitely, as you mentioned, getting a little bit hotter outside. And before anything, man, shout out to the Lee Scott Academy Warriors last night, picking up arguably their most important wins of the season, the varsity girls and the varsity boys, both at home last night, both defeated the Glenwood Gators. It took an extra period, and it took an extra 4 minutes for the ladies to do it. They won 52-49 in overtime. The boys followed suit, won that one 66-63. I described a little bit about it in the post game, where it was the definition of two instant classics. Like, it was an absolutely fantastic environment. All of the Warrior family showed up and showed out. Credit to Glenwood for bringing the environment as well. It was 50% of the gym was cheering and going crazy after every single possession. So an incredible environment to be a part of. Lucky to be able to call it, and excited to be able to get out of there with wins. It now moves everything focusing to tonight. Yes, it's crazy enough that Lee Scott plays again tonight. Tiger Country 104.5. We head to Beulah for the final area game, the girls and the boys. And because of the win last night, if both the boys and the girls can win tonight, they will force a coin flip between them and Glenwood, because those two teams are each other's only losses. For the regular season area champion, and the winner of that coin flip will host the area tournament. So really excited. You took care of step one. Step two, you got to take care of tonight. More importantly than arguably your opponent, yourself, to have to avoid any sort of emotional downfall. But really, really excited to be able to call another game tonight in what could be a very, very important game as you make your way into next week.
Yep, I'll be on the road as well for Auburn High. We'll tell you more about this later in the show, plug all the broadcasts and everything. But I'm on the road tonight at Smith Station. Auburn High back in action for the first time in 9 days, because wow, we were supposed to play two games last week, and all that got moved around because of the weather, right? We had a game against Russell County that just got completely waxed. And then the games against Smith Station and Opelika both got moved to this week because of the weather. So we're on the road at Smith Station tonight. Looking forward to that. Girls start at 5:30, boys at 7. Girls for Auburn High have already secured the area. Boys are trying to stay alive as the 2 seed. If they win tonight, they'll secure either the 2 or the 3. They'll play Opelika Thursday as 1 of the 2 or 3s, but they'll play each other in the area, I believe. So it is what it is. So tonight will be good, though, trying to get the season sweep against Smith Station. That's on the road. And again, we'll plug all of that a little bit later. Well, go ahead and open up the phone lines, though. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That's the phone line number you could call in. What's on your mind? What do you want to talk about on this Tuesday afternoon? 334-321-1390. You can also shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. Have had numerous texts talking and congratulating Christian on joining the show and us, and looking forward to the future of what this show is going to be. So I'm excited for that, and I want to dive right into this thing. College basketball. Mondays are not typically the just super heavyweight game after game after game type of nights like the Tuesday Wednesdays are, and especially not like Saturdays are. But man, the two games that were highlighted last night were pretty darn good, CG. They were pretty good. Duke has to fight, scratch, crawl, I mean, do whatever they can to escape another bad ACC team. And if they don't have Cooper Flagg, they lose this game easily against NC State inside of Cameron Indoor Stadium.
You talked about Monday not necessarily being the most exciting slate with everything. Is it crazy to say that college basketball might be the best product in sports right now? I don't think that's too crazy of a statement to say.
I think it's the truth.
But every single night you get chaos and madness, and you get pure entertainment from a viewership standpoint. It started last night, Duke and North Carolina. You mentioned Duke wins it 74-64, but by no means whatsoever did that 10-point win feel like a double-digit win for Duke. Cooper Flagg had 28 points, went 8 of 17 from the field. However, 11 for 13 from the free throw line. And that's a story that we've talked about a lot with a couple of teams. We mentioned it with Georgia at home and the whistles that they were able to get against some top-ranked competition at home. North Carolina State shot 10 of 22 from the three-point line. They shot 45%. They shot 6 of 7 from the free throw line. Duke went 4 of 20 from the three-point line.
Something doesn't smell right here.
But 24 of 28 from the charity stripe. You mentioned if Duke doesn't have Cooper Flagg, if Duke doesn't have the little line that runs 12 and a half feet from the basket, you're not winning this basketball game.
The old Cameron Indoor whistles, baby. We talked about this when Auburn went to Cameron Indoor, where you have to beat Duke and you are not going to get the calls. And there were a lot of people that listened to this show or listened to the station that hadn't experienced it before, maybe hadn't really watched a whole lot of games of Duke inside that building, but that was brought to light when Auburn fans really saw it firsthand. When Auburn had to play Duke, you had to go up against the Cameron Crazies, and you also had to go up against the Cameron officials. They get calls in there. It's just, you could, every fan base wants to say it about a road game. I get it. That place is just different because of the pedestal that it's put on in terms of the college basketball cathedrals of the world, right? Of one of the top 6 or 7 arenas in college basketball. I really do think officials, and here we go down an officials conversation, they get, I'm not going to say spooked walking in there.
You know where you're going to.
You know
to
where
work.
You are. You do. You let it affect you. And I don't think anybody would be able to not do that. You just can't do it to that extent. I mean, I don't have all the numbers in front of me, but I would love to see the difference in free throw totals at home versus the road this year for Duke and how different they are. And look at the past 2 decades. I bet the numbers would be astonishing. I haven't had time to do that, but I would think, I would be willing to bet there would be a several thousand difference if you're looking over the last couple decades.
That would be a crazy and a really interesting statistic to see, like every team's number of free throws over the last 10 years, what they've shot at home versus on the road, to see what those teams get inside their own gymnasium. I'm trying to pull up. We'll go to the Wake Forest game from last week where Duke won by 7. They only shot 17 free throws. Wake Forest shot 23. So, I mean, that in itself is a 12 or 11 free throw difference. So, I mean, things like that. I mean, that's three or four possessions that you're able to capitalize on at the free throw line.
And think about, I'm pulling up the box score against Auburn. They shot 27. Remember this? Duke shot 27 free throws. You know how many Auburn shot? 12. Remember that? They shot 15 more free throws than Auburn did, and Auburn still only lost by 6. Auburn went 10 of 12. They went 17 of 27. You made 7 more free throws. You won by 6. What a crazy formula that is and how that works out. And I do want to reiterate, I've said this on several platforms, several other shows, and to basically anybody that'll listen, the ACC sucks. The ACC is bad. They're a bad basketball conference.
And that's with radio politeness.
Yeah, that's to keep my job. The ACC is bad, okay? I've said this stat several times, and I will not let it die. I will not let this go away, because even with the latest AP poll rankings, the fact still remains. Duke will not play a ranked team in their entire ACC schedule. Not one. They have nobody on their schedule. Not even North Carolina, who's the only other net or a quad one team in the net rankings.
That's what I was about to say. And they play them on Saturday. That's the only one they have.
No, they play them twice. They'll play at North Carolina at the end of the year. They play twice every year. But still.
So they have two.
They have two quad one games, and it's against the same team. Duke will not play a top 25 team their entire conference schedule from January 1 to the middle of March. They won't even sniff a top 25 team until they get to the NCAA tournament, which they wouldn't even see until, what, Sweet 16 maybe?
Yeah.
And I'm telling you right now, they will hurt because of it. They will be burned. And the game that Cooper Flagg doesn't show up, the game that the freshman becomes a freshman, Duke will get eliminated, could very well be in the first round of the NCAA tournament. We're going to talk about the updated bracketology coming up in just a few minutes. But I'm telling you, don't buy stock into Duke. Don't do it. They're the betting favorite to win the national championship right now. That's terrible. Don't waste your money on that. Because while the wins are going to look great and the record's going to be awesome for John Shire, who I like John Shire a lot. But the ACC is bad. And they had to escape last night against NC State on their home floor. I'm telling you, don't be fooled by Duke.
I was just looking up some of the free throw statistics. Duke has shot 375 free throws this year. Auburn has shot 356. So the number, I guess, per game is not as astronomical as you might think. Who would you think the leading free throw shooter for this Auburn team is? It's a pretty obvious answer.
Chad?
Jani Broome.
Oh, okay.
Actually, no, it is Chad. Chad shot one more than Jani. He has shot 72 free throws. Jani Broome has shot 71.
I mean, either one would make sense.
But we'll go with 72 with Chad Baker-Mazzara. How many do you think Cooper Flagg has shot this year?
Oh, God.
Almost double. Jeez. 132 free throws.
132 free throws in 20 games. So yeah. So easy math would say 13 free throws a game. Good Lord. I mean, those are NBA numbers.
That's almost, that's a double digit to your points if you go 10 for 13 from the line.
Which you would expect somebody like him to do. I don't know what his percentage is this year, but I'm sure he's an 80% free throw shooter. If he's getting there that many times, I'm sure he shoots 80%.
81.1% from the free throw line. He's averaging 19.9 a game.
Gosh, half of them are coming from the free throw line. Literally, half of them are coming from the free throw line.
What was it? He had 28 and 11 of them.
Gosh.
Last night.
That's wild.
We're from the charity stripe.
That's from 15 absolutely feet. Wild. And Duke survives against an NC State team that is 9-11 overall, 2-7 in ACC play.
But they made the Final Four last year.
I forgot Duke beat Wake Forest. Sorry. I forgot they beat Wake Forest last weekend. My bad. The other game last night that was very entertaining, awesome game to watch from the jump. Now, you missed the first 8 minutes of this game because of how slow the Duke and NC State game finished out. How about number three, Iowa State? On the road at Arizona in the Big 12, which I feel like is a conference that for some reason, CG, is still being underrated. Nobody's really talking about the Big 12. Nobody's concerned about what's happening in that big conference because of how widespread it is, I think, now. You had an Arizona team that was 7-1 in Big 12 play walking into this game, welcoming in the third-ranked team in the country who was 7-1 in Big 12 play, 17-2 overall, one of those losses, of course, being to Auburn. And Arizona was up at the half. They let Iowa State come back, almost put it away. And a guy named Caleb Love, have you heard the name before? Yeah, you probably grew up watching him, who's been in college basketball for 17 years now. A guy who is not overly known for his threes and was not shooting them well last night was Mr. Caleb Love. He heaves one up. I mean, just let it fly from, what would you say, about 60 feet?
It was from the three-point line.
On the opposite side of the floor.
Just the other one.
A guy that at the time, or for the game, finished 4 of 13 from behind the arc. But he chucks this thing up. Great play by Arizona. Threw it in, had 2 seconds or 3 seconds, two dribbles, and let it fly from about 55, 60 feet. And my boy buried it. I mean, buried it. They were down by three, had to have it, sends it to overtime, and Arizona takes down the third-ranked team of the country, 86-75.
What do you tell your team if you're the opposing head coach where you're on the road, the team that's at home hits a shot like that, even if it's not a crazy three, even if it's just a regular layup at the end of the game, but much less a shot from 65 feet, how do you regroup your team and truly believe that you have a chance?
It's because
I feel like every single person in America that watched the game said, oh, because of that shot, Arizona's going to dominate overtime. And they did, outscoring Iowa State 15-4. In that overtime period. That is a crazy margin. And when you're looking at the Big 12 standings, almost similar to Big 10 football, if you want to make that comparison, the top teams are very, very good, completely different than the SEC, to where there's a 4 or 5 team margin where you're sitting at the top of the cliff and then it falls off. A big time fall off. But Houston at 8-0 in conference play, Arizona now at 8-1. Iowa State 7-2, Texas Tech 6-2, Kansas and Baylor both at 5-3, a couple teams 4-4, and then not even worth mentioning the rest of those teams in their conference. But you mentioned it, a conference that you would think gets really overlooked other than the Houston and Iowa State team, but that Texas Tech team took Iowa State to overtime. Yeah. So, I mean, you continue to look at it. Conference foes just doing battle against each other, and another perfect example last night.
Iowa State's got to be kicking themselves because with 3 seconds, I watched the end of this game, they had a chance to put it away. They hit the first free throw, or I think he missed the first free throw to go up by three. He then hit the second free throw to go up by three. They had a chance to go up by four and ice this thing.
Wow.
And he split the free throws, and Caleb Love drills a three from, again, 55, 60 feet. And then you said it, they dominated Iowa State in overtime, and this is what college basketball is, and it's what it's been all season long. And it was awesome last night. Two games that I'll admit I wasn't overly excited for. I had them on, and then I was like, oh, they're actually good. Both of them ended up being really, really good. And I expect that to be the case coming up again tonight with great games around the SEC, other games around college basketball as well. More on that as we're just underway here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line, plus latest bracketology that came out earlier today. We'll tell you what's going on around the SEC. How about the Big Ten and the Big 12 that we just talked about? We'll give you an inside look at that as well. All that coming up right here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
War Eagle, this is Coach Bruce Pearl, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7.
We continue on here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate you being with us on this January 28th, 2025. And with it being a Tuesday, means Joe Lunardi updated his bracketology at ESPN. And, you know, these bracketologies get watered down sometimes because we start seeing them in, oh, I don't know, November. And it's like, man, you don't know what you're talking about. Nobody knows what they're talking about. You can't predict it in November. It's impossible. And it still seems like it's kind of impossible to predict it, even right now at the end of January with, what, I would say 7 weeks probably of the season, regular season, about 7 weeks or so. And it seems like it's hard to do it now. But you at least have a better idea of what's going to happen. And I feel like you have a better idea of at least in what general area a team is going to be. Auburn's going to be a 1 or 2 seed more than likely, right? You've got teams out of the SEC that will be bubble teams until Selection Sunday. And some of those other teams that'll hang around a 6, 7, or 8 seed. So you at least have a better idea now than what you did back in November. And the latest bracketology, and you can use whichever one you want. I know there's a million different ones. I just use ESPN for formality reasons. It's easiest. It's the most known. Auburn is still your top overall seed. No shock there. They're the second or the first ranked team in the country. Second week in a row that they've been unanimously the number one team in college basketball. So Auburn is your first overall seed. You start looking at the bubble. Last four byes. How about that? Two SEC teams are on there with Oklahoma and Georgia. That means they are in, and they are securely in for now is what that means for them. Last four in, you've got another SEC team in Texas, and then after that, SEC is not represented on the bubble because the rest of them are securely in the NCAA tournament, because as of right now, on January 28th, 2025, the SEC still is slated to get 13 teams into the NCAA tournament.
This could be one of the more interesting play-in years, too, because you have, obviously, the 4-16 seeds that are going to play for the final two spots there. Texas and UCF are scheduled to play as the 2-12 seeds. And then Ohio State and North Carolina.
How awesome would that be?
The other 11-seed play-in game. So those are out, those are games that's not just, I'll watch because it's on. It's actually, we're going to watch because teams like that, if they get their seed right and they get hot in the right spot, could make a little bit of a run.
And those games are played up in Dayton, so the crowd for Ohio State would be incredible.
Yeah. Looking at it right now, again, things are still very much scheduled to change, but Auburn keeping that number one overall seed is still so, so important. It's in Lexington right now, but the South region, you see the parentheses next to it, Atlanta, is where they'd play a couple of their final games if they were able to make it. Is it the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight? Is that where those those two games would be played in State Farm Arena? Looking over at the East, with Duke being the second number one seed, that was the one that I saw that whole six that whole team,
dude,
that whole bracket
brutal.
Looks bracket.
Holy
looks terrible. UConn is the 8 seed. St. Mary's is the 9. Michigan is slated to play Yale, Mississippi State,
some team from the Ivy League,
Mississippi State, Akron, Texas Tech, a team that we mentioned from that Big 12, VCU, Michigan State's in there, St. John's in there, and then Florida as the 2 seed. That little 16 team bracket right there is brutal.
Yes. Yeah, you said it. Duke as the 1, Florida as the 2. You have Michigan State as the 3, which is a top 5 team in college basketball right now. You have Mississippi State as the 4. Michigan is the 5, which I think is an underrated team in the Big Ten.
Speaking of, shout out Trey Donaldson for the game winner.
Balling out. He's balling out, and I'm so happy for him. I knew he would. Dusty May's a great coach, and Trey's a great player, so shout out to him. You're absolutely right. That's a brutal bracket on the Eastern side, if that's how it were to play out.
Yes.
For Auburn's case, you'd get one of the winners of those 16-seeded games played in Dayton in the first four. If you win that game, according to Joe Lunardi on ESPN, you get the winner of Creighton and Baylor. I don't love that. I don't hate it, but I don't love it. Also in Auburn's bracket right now, Wisconsin's in there. Texas A&M is in there. Missouri is in there. Houston.
You know the SEC teams.
Houston, a team that Auburn's already beaten. Clemson out of the ACC. Georgia. Purdue. So if you're Auburn and that's the bracket you get, I know you haven't played all of your schedule yet, but you would have played, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 teams in that bracket. By the end of the year, you will have already played. If this were the bracket to be right now, Auburn will have played 5 of the teams in their portion of the bracket. That's a huge advantage.
It is, and it's weird to think about if certain teams win each little section of that 16-team bracket, you could play the Sweet 16 and the Elite 8 games against opponents that you've already played.
Wow.
Which is a benefit, but also could be a little bit scary. If Auburn met Texas A&M in the Sweet 16 and Houston in the Elite 8,
There's an SEC team in every four-team portion of that bracket. You could have SEC represented in the Final Four, Sweet 16, Elite 8. Who knows? Lots of basketball season left, though. We'll keep breaking this down as we go. Gonna switch gears and talk a little college football, as changes just seem to be inevitable at this point. More on that after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goetz. Phone lines are open. Give us a call. What's on your mind on this Tuesday afternoon? 334-321-1390. We've had a ton of action already in the On the Line text box as well. Always appreciate you texting there. We try to get those out on the air as much as possible. That number is 334-784-1067. And as we were talking how it was too early for bracketology to be displayed in November and December for college basketball, is it too early to already have college football playoff predictions in January? Almost an entire year away from, or at least 11 months until a new bracket, the final bracket, comes out for college football in 2025? Because don't worry, ladies and gentlemen, ESPN's got you covered. They've got you their first official prediction for the 2025 college football season. I mean, how in the world? I mean, we know why. It's obvious. We know why. And when you hear some of the matchups, you're really going to know why.
Yes.
We know why they're doing it, Christian. We do. And look, it's the business. I understand. You got to get engagement. You got to get the clicks. You got to get the people riled up. I understand. But come on. But it's going to work because we're going to talk about it.
It's crazy. You feel like you're halfway through the fourth quarter watching the national championship and you get the way too early, top 25.
Yeah.
Literally. And you sit there and immediately swipe off because it's like, no, maybe this year you were already looking ahead and wanting to get rid of this national championship. But absolutely insane that you're already, again, we know the reason why. It's because, and I guess it worked because we're sitting here using a segment to talk about it, but half the people that watch college football won't be able to tell you who's starting at quarterback for half of these teams next year, but ESPN can run their little their segments and see and predict exactly how everything's going to go with Gunnar Stockton as your quarterback for Georgia next year.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. It's cool. Look, it's talking season now in terms of football. I totally get it. And if some of these matchups, and we're going to sound hypocritical because we are going to look at this for just a second, because if some of these matchups become true, A, I don't think they'd do it. B, I think college football would implode on itself because fan bases would burn each other's towns to the ground because, just a little first round matchup between the 8 and 9 seed of Michigan and Ohio State. Yes, that's the first matchup they have is Michigan and Ohio State matching up in the first round of the playoff. They also have Alabama in the college football playoff, which is fascinating in terms of what's been happening in Tuscaloosa as the 5 seed taking on Boise State. Shocker. They also have LSU making the college football playoff with head coach Brian Kelly, who might very well be on somewhat of a hot seat there in Baton Rouge. Some would say Christian playing. Oh, who's that?
Can I take a wild guess?
Yeah, go ahead.
Notre Dame.
You got it.
Oh,
taking on,
man,
Notre Dame. Brian Kelly and LSU paired up with Notre Dame. And then battle of the logos, battle of the former Mack Brown locations, Texas and North Carolina are set to battle in the first round of the playoff. According to ESPN predicting for 2025, your top 4 seeds in the college football playoff getting those first round byes, Georgia as the 1, Penn State as the 2 out of the Big Ten, Utah, the 3rd-ranked team out of the Big 12, and Louisville out of the ACC. That is gross. That is disgusting. They'd have Michigan taking on Georgia, Louisville taking on Bama, Notre Dame taking on Penn State, and Utah taking on Texas. Final four would be Georgia versus Bama again. Other side is Penn State, Utah, according to ESPN's projections, and they have Penn State winning the national championship next season, according to ESPN.
So you were wrong. So James Franklin will finally get that first national championship.
Yeah, why fire him? Why even have the conversation if ESPN predicts and thinks that they're going to win it?
You
may as well keep him around.
Shout out to week one. I apologize for you, as that's a lose-lose for you'll have to watch one of your teams go down in Ohio State and Michigan.
Yeah, that'll be unfortunate. But I'll just watch and hope both teams have fun.
But the storylines from this, again, reading out everything that happened shows the engagement. They're trying to farm from everybody. And I guarantee if you type in some of these responses or some of these games that are matching up that you're supposed to see, you'll see six or seven articles from both teams of this is what ESPN's predicting. So they're getting exactly what they want, but there's no way that you're telling me that it would ever match up to where Michigan will play Ohio State in the first round. LSU will play Notre Dame in the first round just because of that's how the cards were drawn. That's how the luck, it just happened to go that way. And then Alabama's going to play Boise State, and you're going to continue to have everything the way that it's going to unfold. It is strictly there to get some sort of engagement, to get some sort of, oh my gosh, is that what our look ahead is supposed to look like?
Well, I'm not going to say that these matchups could never happen, because I think they would absolutely do this just for the entertainment and the viewership purposes and the listenership.
Yeah,
that's fair. If it's going to be ran and decided by human beings, then there will be bias. We just had this whole conversation about this past year and the year before that with the college football playoff. That continues to be the main issue, where we took technology out of it with the BCS and we said, who's smarter than the computers? Oh, yeah, a bunch of humans. And we decided to let them make the decisions. And then we complain as a society, a college football fan base, right? We complain because they don't do it the way we would do it. And everybody has their own thought, and everybody has their own way, and everybody has their own reasoning. But you start looking at this prediction of college football playoff for 2025 into the 2026 year, I'm not going to say they wouldn't ever put Auburn versus Alabama or Ohio State versus Michigan, or for the storyline, Brian Kelly facing Marcus Freeman and Notre Dame.
Right.
But I think they absolutely would do it just for the entertainment and the money, because what's it all about? It's about
fun.
The money. Yeah.
Oh, oh,
money's fun. It rhymes kind of. It's about the money. And I think they absolutely would do it. But to sit here and have a prediction in January is absurd to me. Absurd.
How wild is it that it could, I mean, you could see the game happening in week 14, the possibility of those two meeting in the Big 12 or the Big 10 championship the week after, and then if it matches up like that, three straight weeks.
Ryan Day could lose to Michigan for three times in a row in 1 year.
That's crazy.
He'd go 0 for 7.
Or Ohio State could all of a sudden in 1 year
flip that record around.
All of a sudden, 0 and 4 to 3 and 4. That would never happen, I don't think.
No, I don't think so.
But I mean,
speaking of conference championships,
that's what I was about to say, was they, hey, at some point you're not even going to have the conference champion. You've heard me say that for months now, to where the conference champion is going to be left out of conference championships, and the entire world of, no, conference championships still mean a lot to everybody. They still mean everything. Why? Is there news?
I think so.
Oh.
Enlighten us, please.
Yes. So the news, I brought this up. Was it Friday at the end of the show, I believe? Weren't able to get to it yesterday. Wanted to be able to talk about it today. The ACC is now having legitimate conversations about leaving their conference champion in the regular season out of the conference championship at the end of the year. So, in that case, they would essentially have it to where Clemson, or no, they'd have SMU not play in the conference championship. The championship would consist of SMU, if this were last year, and the third place team. And that is for the argument of, so that way there is definitely one team getting in, and then you could have the argument for two. They've also talked about it to where at the end of the year, having all four teams as the top four teams, and you play each other. One plays four, two plays three, and then the two don't play each other at the end. You try and work your way for both, and your regular season record will take over one of the other teams. But that's their argument to try and get two teams into the conference playoff or the national playoff, the college football playoff every single year. So it's happening.
I'm trying to wrap my brain around all of this. And the thing that just instantly comes to mind is if we're having conferences and their commissioners and their leadership groups, if they're having to come together and try to outsmart the college football playoff, don't you think that should raise a few questions? Don't you think that should be an alarming sound, an alarming factor, something that you don't really want to happen? Because the last thing that we want in college football is for the playoff to have its standard, its way of doing things, and then all the other conferences trying to go against it and go over them, around them, under them, whatever the case may be, right? That's not what we're looking for here. And this should be a major double red flag. No swimming illegal. You'll drown if you do. This should be a double red flag of, hey, maybe the system's not operating properly. If we're having major conferences, and the ACC, I'm sure, is not the only one doing this. They're just the ones that have made it public so far of, well, we're going to get screwed unless we try to rig the system. How can we do it? How can we, what loophole can we find to try to get the most teams in the playoff? And it's crazy that I think the SEC will eventually do that. They'll be fighting to get five or six teams in while the ACC says, man, we just want to get two. But my thing is, on a much simpler level, be better. Be a better conference. But I get why the ACC is doing that. My point here is the system's broken because conferences are having to try and find loopholes just to make it fair.
Well, yeah, going back to the win or be better, Dan Lanning talked about it best, to where he's saying, you know, SEC is going to have that simply because of everything and the rights on the shows. And, you know, now there's the SEC on ESPN. But if you win the games you're supposed to win, there's no argument of whether or not you should be in. With the red flags, it creates red flags for both things or both sides of the story, to where you feel like, okay, ACC, why do you feel this desperate to do this to try and get two, three teams into the college football playoff? And at the same time, everybody else should be sitting there going, okay, well, if it's that easy to find a loophole, like you were talking about, if it's that easy to hack the system and work your way to where you can get what you're wanting, shows that whatever 10 years of talking of trying to get the college football expansion and how we used this year as the guinea pig year without any firm foundation. It was just, we'll see how it goes and then we'll make adjustments on the fly. It shows a negative direction in the sport in every single fashion of the manner.
But my thing is, did we get clarity this year? Like, did we learn anything from this year's college football playoff reveal?
Money. Oh. Reveal, no.
Oh, no, we knew that. I said, did we learn anything? Anything new that we didn't already know that Jacob Goins didn't already tell you about? But, like, for real, I don't think we did.
No.
We
knew that automatic bids were dumb. We knew that a group of five team getting a first-round bye is dumb. We knew that the seeding not being based off of what your ranking in the college football playoff is dumb.
Yeah. So the problem is we're going to get to what, October next year or October of this year? And we're going to have the same conversations of, well, they did this last year. Will they follow the same thing, or will they listen to criticisms, or will they, you know, like Alabama more now, or will they like Marcus Freeman, or will they like this coach or this play? You know what I'm saying?
They'll get peer pressured into decisions.
Yeah. Which is what happened years ago anyway. Because it's humans that sit on the board, and it's humans who, I can't stress this enough, humans that have legitimate ties to universities are on the active college football playoff committee. Tell me how that makes sense. tell me
if you carry
how
the
that
two,
makes sense.
And then you round up.
Math isn't my thing. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. Explain it in
effective journalism.
That's a thing.
Explain it to me as if Peyton Thorne was dropping back in the backfield.
Oh, I got it now. And intercepted. Okay, here we go. All right, we got to get to our final break here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line at hour number one. Phone lines are still open. If you want to give us a call, join in on this crazy show on a Tuesday afternoon. 334-321-1390. We'll wrap up hour number one after this.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Got a few more minutes before we get into hour number two. We'll have some more college basketball conversation as we flip to SEC games in the midweek. Coming up tonight. Also tomorrow, we'll talk a little Auburn basketball as they are, again, the number one team in the country. They look to play LSU tomorrow night on the road in Baton Rouge, bottom three or four team in the conference, but still got to take games like that seriously. I mean, we say it all the time. Look around college basketball, man. If you take a night off, you will pay for it.
Well, we talked about it and made it a little bit comical with Oklahoma, how it was, you know, they won two games. It was against two of the bottom teams in the SEC. You look at it like an LSU team right now. If Auburn beats LSU, that's a quad one win for the Auburn Tigers.
They're quad one right now?
Yeah. They sit at 67. Then I think you have
going on the road. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
You have to be top 75 to pick up a road win for a quad one win.
That is crazy, actually.
That shows, again, the depth of the SEC, even with the teams that you consider to be the bottom feeders, right? I mean, South Carolina is, I almost said undefeated. They're undefeated in the win column in SEC play, and Auburn beat them by a field goal.
Look at the teams in the net rankings in terms of the most quad one wins. We've talked about Auburn, who currently sits at 11-1 overall in quad one games. That's the most of any team in college basketball, more than, I think, Oregon's the next top with eight.
Yeah.
Look at the teams of the SEC, though. Texas A&M has six. Kentucky was six. You have Tennessee and Bama both with five. Auburn has five more quad one wins than the next team in the SEC, which is Texas A&M at six.
I saw something that said that Auburn has double the amount of quad one wins than 360 of the 364 teams in college basketball.
Oh, my gosh.
Again, those teams of what it was. Oregon, there's a couple teams with seven and then one with six, I believe.
As of right now, Oregon is eight and the next most is six with Texas A&M, Kentucky, and Iowa State.
Okay, yeah. So those four teams right there are the only teams that are not being more than lapped by Auburn in quad one wins. And the fact that Auburn still has the chance to get, what, eight or nine more on the year?
Yeah, which, good news for Iowa State. We talked about them earlier. They lost to Arizona last night, but at least it was a quad one loss. I need to find, you have to scroll for a long time on this one, buddy. Looking for NC State on here.
Command F works wonders.
Oh, yeah, you're smarter than I am. Yeah, see where NC State is on the net rankings, because that's who Duke almost, because not only is NC State bad, that was at home for Duke. I'm willing to bet it's at least quad two. No way that's a quad three game.
They are 108th, so I don't know exactly where that sits, but
on your home floor,
that's
quad two.
I was
gonna
say that's a mid-tier quad two game.
God, and they almost lost. I mean, yes, they won by 10, but they had to pull away in this game. NC State was not going down without a fight. And Duke had to do everything in there. NC State is down there with Milwaukee, not the Bucks. No, Milwaukee College or whatever it is.
And Troy.
Troy.
And St. Thomas.
Oklahoma State's down there, though. Rip to them. They're in the bottom portion of that Big 12 you talked about a little bit earlier.
And they're in there with Rhode Island. Have you seen the news with the Rhode Island head coach?
Oh, no. Oh, no. No, I haven't.
You know how a couple weeks ago, one of the guys on here got by a social media post.
Yeah, that was you, right?
I don't remember exactly who it was, but it was something about KJ Jefferson transferring back to Arkansas for his senior year and everything. Just I don't remember exactly what it was. But
you talking old Archie Miller out there in Rhode Island?
I am talking about Coach Archie Miller, who in the post game got.
No, I haven't seen
it. And it's funny because it was something I talked about with you during a break yesterday, and we didn't talk about it because it was stupid and it made me giggle, and then I kept scrolling. It was a guy who tweeted out that said, "How dare SEC claims that they're the toughest conference in college basketball when their record is 54-54 since like January 6th when SEC play started." So let that sit for just a second. The SEC is 54-54 since their first conference game.
I wonder why.
Because you play conference games. One team will win and one team will lose. Well, Archie Miller at Rhode Island, in either his post-game press conference or the media day availability, say, "You know, do you know how hard it is to win in every conference? You talk about the SEC, they're 500 and since 2025. So imagine how hard it is to win in every single conference."
Oh, no, not like that, Archie. Oh, man. Sorry, Archie. Maybe that's why you're at Rhode Island. Hour number one is in the book. Stick around. Hour number two coming up.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
Are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goertz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Glad you're with us. Glad to be here, man. I'm your guy, Jacob Goins. Appreciate you tuning in, joining along on this Tuesday afternoon. Christian Griffin with me in the studio as well. Hour number one is in the books, and if you missed any of it, you will be able to go back and listen to the podcast later on today. I'll go ahead and say it'll probably be tomorrow morning when I get that up, just because Christian and I are both on the road. As soon as we're out of the studio, we got to go. We're on the road. We are both 40, 45 minutes away. You're at Buell Lyman Smith Station. And so I will try to get the podcast uploaded first thing tomorrow morning. So just keep that in mind. But you can always go back and check those out on our station website at ESPNAU.com. In the first hour, we talked about college basketball from last night. Also got into some college football news about the playoff. Apparently, we already have predictions for this upcoming 2025 season. Don't really know how that's possible, but you can thank ESPN for that one. And bracketology, where the SEC still slated to get 13 teams into the NCAA tournament. So all of that was in hour number one. And here in hour number two, going to talk a little Auburn basketball, as Bruce and the boys are the number one team in the country. They go to LSU tomorrow for the midweek game, and then to Ole Miss on Saturday. Plus, we'll look at what's coming up in college basketball in the SEC tonight and a little bit for tomorrow as well. Before we get into content, though, I want to remind you that hour number two, each and every day here during On the Line, is brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. So we appreciate them sponsoring the second hour of our show each and every day here on ESPN. Phone lines are open. Be sure to get involved. Get in on the action if you want to be on the line, have something to say, something to add to the show. 334-321-1390. You can also shoot us a text in the On the Line text box, which has been very active today. 334-784-1067. And Christian, second straight week, my man. Auburn is the unanimous number one team in the country. They do it after beating Tennessee this past Saturday. inside of Neville Arena, just for fun, just for a second, given how the AP poll looks, how far do you think Auburn...
I thought you were saying they beat Tennessee just for fun.
I mean, they did do it for fun. Yes, they did. But looking at the AP poll that came out yesterday, if Auburn had lost to Tennessee, how far do you think they would have dropped? Where would they have put Auburn for their second loss of the year, first loss in conference play, a home loss against Tennessee, which would have been within one possession? Just for fun, where do you think they would have put Auburn?
Because it's Auburn, they would have dropped them to like 13th. But
Auburn, first team in basketball history to go from the one line to out of the top 25.
Yeah, from a 2-point loss against the number 6 team in the country. I don't know. It's a really good question. Because Iowa State lost last night. So,
well, the AP poll came out yesterday morning. So,
I'm saying after the Iowa State loss. But I was sitting there. That doesn't play a factor because that was yesterday.
Gotcha.
I mean, I don't think that you can allow Iowa State, Alabama, or Florida to jump them. So honestly, I mean, it would probably be Duke 1, Auburn 2, Iowa State 3. Alabama 4, Tennessee would go from 6 to 5, and then it would be Florida, Houston, Michigan State right after. That would be my best opinion because, again, if that's Auburn's only loss in conference play and it comes to a Tennessee team that at that point would then be a top 5 team in the country, that would be my prediction for them right there.
Don't forget that Tennessee lost to Florida, though. Remember, they got waxed by Florida. So could you put Gators above Tennessee?
They would, yeah.
Probably, right?
It's a good spot. Tennessee would either probably stay right at 6. That would be a good spot, yeah.
That's probably about right.
So Duke, Auburn, Iowa State, Alabama, Florida, and Tennessee would stay right in that same spot, and then Houston and Michigan State to follow.
Auburn would have dropped, and I think you're probably right, one spot, maybe two, maybe, if the numbers worked out that way. It all depends on the AP voters, of course. But
how nice is it that we can talk what if they lost?
Ha! But they didn't. And so now you look at what happens this week for Auburn. They took advantage big time last week of not having the midweek game. And I think, and I talked to Dylan Cardwell last week for Tiger Takes, which is on The Drive on Thursdays at 5:30, brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. And we talked to him about having the week off and how this team doesn't like to take many days off. They like to play and be in the action. And he said, No, we're enjoying this one. He said, we're gonna take advantage of this week, and we're going to get right, get healthy. He talked about himself and his cramping, of course, Jani Broome, and the question marks around him going into the Tennessee game. And they don't have that luxury anymore. You do not get days off now. You've got at LSU on Wednesday. That's coming up tomorrow night. That's 6 o'clock over on Wings 94.3. And then you play at Ole Miss this Saturday afternoon, who is still a top 25 team in college basketball. Somehow, that's a team that's 4-3 in conference play. They're currently on a 3-game losing streak. They play Texas at home tomorrow night to try and get right before the number one team in the nation walks into Oxford.
There's a couple of teams that, going away from this exact point, but very similar teams to like Ole Miss that have lost 3 or 4 straight and still find themselves ranked. How is UConn? Still the 25th ranked team.
Don't you know that they have the greatest coach in the sport?
Yeah, how dare I? Don't turn your back on me. Yeah,
I can't stand him.
We didn't even bring that up. But
we can in a minute. We can in a minute because I have something I want to talk about with Todd Golden too. With that situation getting cleared
up. I was going to say it's not even worth our time. But
oh wow,
no, it is. It is worth talking about. But I saw other rankings have them at like 39th or 43rd. But they have a 25 next to their name.
Where were they at in bracketology right now?
They were the 9 seed.
9 seed.
Either the 8 or the 9 in the top right. The East
region. They are. You're right. They're the 8 seed in that, playing St. Mary's in the first round.
They could play Duke in the round of 32.
And they could beat Duke in the round of 32. That's what's crazy about that. Continue.
It is. But, no, I mean, this week is just as tough, if not even more tough, considering you have to play an extra game, and both games are away from home. Both games on the road. You're in Baton Rouge, and then you're in Oxford, a very, very unofficial first opening line that I had to scroll down to find a website that had one, but has Auburn at -12.5. Against LSU and
tomorrow night. Okay.
I don't hate that. It's probably about accurate, but I mean, you saw what LSU was able to do on the road in Tuscaloosa, whether that was as much LSU playing great, Bama not playing fantastic as well.
Probably a little bit of both. Only one player.
Yes. Sorry. My apologies. But LSU, you think you're able to build some things off of that? Again, only a 7-point loss on the road against the top five team in the country. Now you get to try and defend home court. And I mean, safe to say that it doesn't matter what your record in conference play is, doesn't matter what your record overall is. When you're bringing in a number one team in the country, you're bringing in a team that's as good as they are and then also have the number one by their name. The mentality is, we're going to do something. We're going to make history in that game. So, I mean, Auburn's got a whole week to try and establish themselves even more. Two more quad one opportunities, which is every single game that they play, it feels like. But this week is just as tough, if not even tougher, than the past week.
I'm looking at LSU for just a second, and I flash back to how harsh and how much of a setback LSU went through on the basketball floor when the Will Wade stuff went down. I mean, you're talking about a program that historically just hasn't been all that great, right? I mean, you've got a list of coaches in there that have, I mean, some long tenured coaches there, guys that spent, I mean, you're talking 25 years at LSU back in, what, the 70s and the late 90s. And then you had a coach there for about a decade in the early 2000s and into 08. And then they could never get their footing. And then all of a sudden, here comes this guy, Will Wade. And LSU all of a sudden starts getting talent. They start winning games. They start competing. Now, there were reasons for that, but Will Wade is still a really good head coach. And that whole situation blew up on them in 2022. And in that short amount of time, LSU is yet to bounce back. Will Wade, I just looked it up. He was 105-51 in his time at LSU. He was a 67% winning coach at LSU. And they have yet to find any sort of traction after that, and they were in a dire spot before that. I mean, they were nothing before Will Wade, and they've been nothing since. In an era in the last decade that the SEC has invested more time and money into basketball than any other conference in the country.
Side note, McNeese State, where Will Wade's at now, 16-5.
He's still a good coach. He's still a really good coach.
Very good coach. And it is weird, too, when you've seen the LSU women's program continue to climb and make bigger jumps as well. And so usually when one program takes off like that, the other one is quickly to follow. But LSU at 12-7, 1-5 in conference play right now. Their one win in conference play was at home against Arkansas. So, yeah, yippee.
Woo-hoo.
But
a win's a win.
It's a probably at the time was a quad one win, if not a quad two win, which they don't have too many of them. Their best win in non-conference play was probably UCF, just because of who they were able to knock down. They beat Texas A&M opening night on their home floor. They also beat Kansas State and Florida State. So, I mean, there's some good wins in there. But, yeah, you talk about a program that's just really suffered and still trying to find their footing. You feel like
that Cam Carter can play, though.
I was about to say, you've thought of LSU the past couple of years as you get a couple of really good guys that can score the basketball, but that just seemed to struggle defensively. And I feel like that's another kind of similar situation this year. Cam Carter, the guard, averages 17.6 per game. The next one right there, Jordan Sears at 14.2. So you do have four guys that average double figures, and their top two free throw shooters are above 87%, and a couple of them shoot right around 40% from three. So it's not a team that doesn't know how to score. Just feels like when you're looking at all of these pieces of the puzzle, they can't seem to find the correct pieces. They have the outline pieces, right? The easiest part of the puzzle, but then you start working and everything just kind of blends in together. You've yet to find the little pastel colors that have yet to, that you need to find all the certain pieces right in the middle of that puzzle.
This will only be the third home game for LSU in conference play. This will be the first time they've played at home in 2 weeks. Their last home game in conference was that Arkansas game on January 14th. That's literally 2 weeks ago. that you played. It'll be 15 days since they played a home game for an SEC matchup for LSU. And it's going to be with the number one team in the country walking in on an early Wednesday night tip. I don't expect the crowd to be anything crazy. I expect there to be a decent amount of Auburn fans. I know it's a midweek game. I know that's a lot tougher to get to. I don't see this being a crazy environment. I don't see this being one that Auburn needs to sweat out and just be nervous about. But knowing Bruce Pearl and knowing this team, they're going to give LSU everything they got. They're going to be fully prepared, fully ready, and have a game plan for this LSU squad who struggles in pretty much all facets of the game.
LSU is 10-1 at home this year. As when you look at the SEC standings, other than South Carolina, who's lost a majority of their home games in every single conference game. I mean, the only team that doesn't have a crazy record at home is Arkansas at 10-3, Texas at 10-3. Otherwise, I mean, you're looking 9-0, 9-1, 10-1, 15-0. Missouri's played 15 home games.
Good Lord. That's crazy.
Tennessee's 11-0, Mississippi State's 8-1, Vanderbilt's 11-1, 9-1, 9-1, 11-1 with Kentucky. So people in the SEC love defending home courts. And so there's no better kickstart to what we've talked about with how this team hasn't been able to figure out. No better kickstart than to be able to say, hey, this past year we beat the number one team in the country at home.
It would be a way to do it. I'm looking at this past Saturday where you had two road teams win in the SEC. A flashback. I have a take that I think is going to be legitimate here. It is Wednesday, and then looking at last Tuesday just to make sure. Well, Tuesday didn't flow. I was going to say, I feel like every night in the SEC, there's a road team that gets it done. You have to go back to last Tuesday on the 21st, so a week ago from today, where Bama won at home, Tennessee won at home, and Texas won at home. But Wednesday night, you had an SEC team went on the road. Saturday, you had two SEC teams went on the road. And there's more likely Saturdays because of everybody playing. But it's doable. You go back to Wednesday the 15th. That's when Texas went on the road to Oklahoma in that crazy game where they came all the way back and got that one done. So it's possible in the SEC. It's hard to do. It's hard to win on the road in general. But it's definitely doable. And Auburn has to find a way to be locked in and be focused and go into LSU, who's not good, and get a win over a team that you are just very much superior of.
It's also just, again, I talked about it with Lee Scott Academy. You hear about it in all of sports. Basketball seems to be the one that you see it the most just because there's not a full week like there is in college football where you have that break. But the emotional fall off, right, to where it's a little bit of a trap game. You just got done playing Tennessee, who was ranked 6th, now is ranked 8th in the country. On Saturday, you go to Oxford in a place that you've struggled in, and you have that midweek game against LSU, a team that you don't really expect a lot from. There's not going to be too much hype around the game. It's a team and a game that I would worry about a little bit more if it was a past Auburn team, but you feel like you've heard Coach Pearl talk about it with this team so much. Again, right after the Tennessee game, talking about how four of those wins in conference play could very easily go the other way, and you're looking at yourself at 2-4 in conference play rather than 6-0, I think you'll have the team ready to go tomorrow night.
Auburn taking on LSU tomorrow night in Baton Rouge. Game begins at 6. Some great games coming up tonight, though, in the SEC. Kentucky, Tennessee, South Carolina, Georgia, Oklahoma, Texas A&M. More on that coming up in just a little bit here in hour number 2 on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. I do want to dive into some of those coaching news and some of that coaching news for college basketball. Dan Hurley, Todd Golden, other situations around college basketball. We'll have that coming up for you as the second hour rolls on after this here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
As college basketball continues to roll on and how great the games have been from last night to the ones coming up tonight and what's been happening since conference play has started, Christian, there seems to always be some sort of coaching controversy, whether it's Dan Hurley yelling at officials and reminding everybody that he's the greatest coach in the sport, which shout out to ESPN's College Game Day on Saturday, who was in town, of course, set up inside a Neville Arena, set up at what is to be named Bruce Pearl Court, and did a what I thought was a really, really good show. Reese Davis, I mean, just born to host. I mean, it's just a great, great talent. And Jay Billis, Seth Greenberg, the whole crew, who had a really good show on Saturday inside of Neville Arena. And they did a deep dive on the Dan Hurley situation. And credit to them, more than I've seen that group, yes, or most groups on national TV, they got heated. They got into it. And every one of them had a different opinion. Yeah. And I thought it was great. I really, really did. Jay Williams, I mean, they all had a different opinion about the Dan Hurley stuff. And I'm sure most people have seen it by now. He just can't keep his mouth shut, and he just thinks he's the next coming of the Lord. And credit, he's a really good coach, and he is the best coach in the country. He's a back-to-back national champion. He is the best coach in college basketball right now. But he has no problem, Christian, letting you know about it.
It's like a nickname where you can't come up with your own nickname, right? You can't be like, you will call me this. But if people give it to you, it's okay. For people to say that he's the best coach in college basketball feels like the right thing to do. It feels respectable. It feels like it's the correct option. But following a timeout where you walk an official onto basically essentially half court with you to argue a call, and then he begins to walk away to go to his spot that he's supposed to stand in between timeouts, and you hear Coach Hurley say, "Don't you turn your back on me. I'm the best," word I can't say, "coach in the sport." Feels
gross.
It feels like it just rubs you in the wrong way in every way, shape, and form. I mean, it feels like, as good of a coach as he is, it's almost like, all right, Dan, your acting stars are going down. You're not getting the ratings that you need to, the Grammys. They're not really looking right now. So I need you to just lose your mind on the sideline real fast. We'll make sure that we have camera C pointed at you at the right times, and you can fall to the floor a couple times a game.
It's like when Britney Spears or Miley Cyrus or Katy Perry, when they start to lose their relevancy in the media and in the attention world, they do something really crazy and stupid to bring it all back in the spotlight. That's what it seems like here with Dan Hurley.
Check off Miley Cyrus on the bingo card as well, folks.
There you go. And the Game Day crew, Andrea Carter there as well, all had a different opinion because she played, Billis played, Greenberg coached, Williams played. I mean, you're talking about some of the best names and the biggest names in the history of college basketball on the men and women's side, and they all had a different thought on, is this acceptable? Can this go on for Dan Hurley? And some said, who cares? He's passionate. He's coaching. He's defending his guys. He's getting his point across. Some were saying, do it, but don't do it in the spotlight. Don't do it in the camera. And some said, quit acting like a child. You look ridiculous, and you're destroying the brand that you've worked so hard to build.
Williams' topic of, you know, well, maybe he didn't think the cameras were going to be on him is a little bit... Okay.
Was it Billis that was like, man, everything is recorded?
Right.
He was or like, was it the other way around? I can't remember.
Billis is one who was like, you can't get away with anything nowadays.
And it's true.
It's very much true, but by no means did Hurley go, okay, I think I can say this because 8 seconds after I called a timeout, I'm not going to be seen by anybody, any camera doing this.
Are we in a commercial break? Okay, right. Now I'm going to let
you
have it.
Yeah. Let me wait until... So the commercial starts playing, and then I'm going to let you have it at half court and let you know. It's like the famous bowling clip. Who do you think you are? I am.
Classic.
That's quite literally what happened the other night.
Here's my thing. I'm all about passionate people. Passion is one of the words that I live my life by. And I think college basketball, you see so many big name coaches who have gotten to where they are because of the heat and the passion that they have. Bruce Pearl is one of the biggest names in the sport because of that. I say all the time, officials hate to see Bruce Pearl and Auburn on their schedule. They hate it because he works you for 40 minutes. But you've never seen Bruce Pearl say the things that Dan Hurley has said. And that's what the Game Day guys were talking about, too. They said, do you really think that Roy Williams and Coach K and Bobby Knight didn't say these things? Yeah, they said them. But it was also a different era. And I don't think anybody's mad at Dan Hurley for being passionate. I think people are upset because he's acting like a child. And he's supposed to be the greatest coach in the sport. Okay, act like it.
It would be the exact equivalent of Bruce Pearl on Saturday night after not getting a call or a whistle go your way going, we're the number one team in the country. You don't walk away from me. You will call out a foul.
Right. You will listen to me. How many coaching box warnings has Bruce Pearl received in his career? Got to be 30. He's received several texts as well. Bruce Pearl is one of those that it's like the sixth man on the floor. Yes. He'll be the sixth defender sometimes. He will. And I know people hate it. I get it. But the whole Dan Hurley thing is, man, act like you've been there before. Act like you're an adult. I get you want to get your point across, and I get you're fighting for your guys. That's cool. And we hate on officials more than anybody on this show. But you got
to
respect
There's
them.
Ways to go about
There's ways
your
to
business.
Do it. Yeah. You understand that, especially being a baseball guy. There's a certain way you talk to officials.
Yes.
I don't think it's right, but you have to do it. It's the name of the game. You got to play it the way it's supposed to be played. And Dan Hurley rubs people the wrong way. And he's very open. He's very passionate. He will do and say whatever he needs to do and say to win games and compete for national championships. And they said it best on game day. If he's your coach, you love him. Everybody else can't stand him.
It's kind of the national media where his acting career rubs everybody the wrong way because of how spastic he is on the sideline. He'll fall to the floor or will do a cartwheel, it feels like, just going crazy on his end of the floor. And if you're a UConn fan, yeah, I'm sure that you're sitting there going, you know, look how passionate everything is. Something like this, however, feels like it's a bit too far. It feels like it was just the wrong way of handling a certain situation, although whatever you're saying might not be a false statement.
All right, we'll take a break. We got 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Great SEC games coming up tonight and some tomorrow as well. We'll break it all down and give our picks, including a top 15 matchup in Knoxville. That's coming up when the Tuesday edition of On the Line continues.
With Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goetz. It's been a great show so far, and we appreciate you being along for the ride. And since it is a Tuesday, we have lots more college basketball starting up tonight around the SEC. We've already talked about a great game that happened last night, a couple of great games that happened last night. Duke and NC State, Arizona getting a buzzer beater shot to go to force overtime and take down a really good Iowa State team. Had a lot of that earlier in the show today. While Auburn doesn't play until tomorrow, CG, there are some good games around the league tonight, starting right off the rip, 6 o'clock on ESPN. It's another top 15 matchup around the SEC. 12th ranked Kentucky and the 8th ranked Tennessee Volunteers. Mark Pope and the Cats heading to Knoxville to take on a Tennessee team that's desperate for a win.
Yeah, number 12 versus number 8, the 6 o'clock game tonight that you mentioned, the early slate. Tennessee right now, 10.5-point favorites. A little bit surprising there. I guess playing in Knoxville plays a couple of points difference in that game over under right around 145.5. So they're expecting this to be what feels like a 75-65 or 77-67 type of game to get right into that line with what I saw. Yes, Auburn's defense is great, but from what I saw from Tennessee's offense, you were saying it before the Auburn game. Have they put up 70 in an SEC game yet?
I think it was 80.
80
was the number that I was looking at.
But they haven't scored
score
or an opponent.
Or give up. It's 80. Yeah, that's okay. The number is the fact that Tennessee still has not scored 80 plus or given up 80 plus since the turn of the new year, since SEC play started, now accounting for 7 games in conference play.
Well, they're expecting them to hit right around that margin again with 10.5 points inside their own Coliseum. That's a scary game, I feel like, especially for Tennessee. Both of these teams really desperately need a win that you just talked about. Tennessee, you feel like, needed
a little bit more coming off the heartbreaker in Neville Arena on Saturday night. The ability to go back to your place and get a bounce back win against a top 15 team, a team that we've talked about all season long that's going to be competing for an SEC championship in the Kentucky Wildcats. Coach Mark Pope has done a fantastic job. I don't know if I can get behind 10.5 points, though. That just feels like a really, really big line.
Well, I'll tell you why that line's probably the way it is, in case you missed the news, or for anybody listening that didn't see the news. One of the best guards in the SEC this season, Lamont Butler, is not playing in this game. He's out with a shoulder injury. He tried to give it a go against Vanderbilt this last Saturday, was not 100%. Mark Pope says he's not 100%. He's not playing in this game tonight. So maybe that's why. I mean, you're talking about a guy that averages 13 points, 5 assists, 2 steals, and he knocks down 40% of his shots from deep. I mean, that's a pretty big loss for Kentucky to not have on the road in Knoxville. They're saying he's worth several possessions in this game. I mean, again, averages 13 points, and he averages almost 5 assists per game. If you do simple math, 2 points per assist, right? I mean, that's
28 points a night.
That's 28 points a night that you're losing right there off of your offensive production. So maybe that's why the line is the way
it is. Tennessee, 10.5. That just feels like it's a bit small. I mean, I feel like if anything, it needs to needs to be a little bit more. I'll take Tennessee to happily cover with that.
No, but even so, like, in games like this, I'm always on the side of, why not go with, for entertainment purposes only, why would you not bet on the offensive team? Why would you not bet on the better shooting team, the better scoring team, the more productive team on the offensive side of the floor? Tennessee's just a scary squad. They've proven they can hang with anybody. They've proven that they can almost beat anybody. But down the stretch, right, for anybody that happened to have Tennessee in that game on Saturday against Auburn, I mean, you weren't feeling confident at all. And the play that they drew up was not a Rick Barnes Tennessee-style play with a Zakai Ziegler corner three. And it obviously didn't go down. Whereas a team like Auburn, who is built offensively, you trust them to go and win games, whether it's inside their home gym or it is on the road like Kentucky is tonight in Thompson Bowling Arena. I just feel like you go with Kentucky and hope they keep it close.
It is. It's a weird dynamic with these two teams. It'll be somewhat similar when Alabama and Tennessee do battle, to where it's like, which team do you trust? Do you trust the team that's going to get you stops but can't put the ball into the hole as easily? Or do you trust the team that can put up 100 on any given night but could also allow the other team to give up 100 any other night? It's like watching Pac-12 football, rest in peace, but Pac-12 late at night when you were watching Oregon and Oregon State and it was 70-63 in the final score, and it was literally which team can stop the other team from scoring. Like, there's two totally different dynamics in this one, and I mean, you'd still want to lean Kentucky a little bit just because, again, both of these teams off of emotional heartbreaks. But Tennessee, man, I mean, I can't imagine a game like that where you get so caught up in the battle on the road inside of a really hostile environment in Neville Arena, and then you have to come back after being absolutely exhausted and play one of the best offensive teams in the SEC.
Tennessee losers 2 of their last 3. Kentucky's on a 2-game losing streak against Alabama and against Vanderbilt. So both of these squads, Christian, they're looking for wins in the SEC. You start looking at the updated standings going into this week of midweek games around the SEC. And man, there's a lot of big name programs that could use a win, starting with Tennessee and Kentucky tonight. The Cats are 3-3. Tennessee's 4-3 in SEC play. Of course, Tennessee will get that midweek bye probably next week. Just, I haven't looked at their schedule that far, but it'll be coming up soon. Both of these teams are squarely in the middle of the SEC standings. I mean, sandwiched in between them are Texas A&M and Ole Miss, and Tennessee, Kentucky on top and bottom. Outside of that, Vanderbilt on top and Texas right there behind them. This thing is going to get ugly. It's going to get messy down the stretch in the Southeastern Conference. Thankfully, Auburn has pulled themselves away and kind of avoiding all of that right now. But all it takes is a bad week, and you're right there in the middle of it.
It's crazy looking at the SEC, the wins and loss streaks when you're looking at the SEC standings. Tennessee, obviously, their record is 1 straight loss. Texas A&M with 1 loss. Ole Miss with 3 straight losses. Kentucky with 2 straight losses. And then the bottom 4, Georgia, LSU, Arkansas, and South Carolina. 4 straight, 2 straight, 1 straight for Arkansas. And the heartbreaker for South Carolina, who's 0-7 in SEC play. The other thing looking at here, Tennessee is 11-0 at home. Kentucky is 1-3 on the road this year.
Wow.
So that plays a factor that you wouldn't necessarily think about, but Kentucky 3-3 in conference play. All three losses have come on the road.
That's a Calipari hangover, man. I mean, that was something he could never get done when he was there in Kentucky. So that game coming up tonight, Kentucky-Tennessee inside Thompson Bowling Arena. Again, that one's at 6 o'clock for a top 15 matchup. Two other games that are happening around the SEC tonight that won't, they're not going to catch national headlines, and one of them won't catch hardly any headlines, but it's one that if you're an SEC basketball fan, you'll have it on somewhere. South Carolina and Georgia, they play the exact same time as the Tennessee and Kentucky game, which is, you know, only going to hurt their ratings, of course. You've got the Gamecocks and the Dogs in Stegman Coliseum in Athens. Georgia 2-5 in SEC play. You mentioned South Carolina. They're 0-7, man, in SEC play. We knew it. There was going to be one team that had to be I don't even know what term you want to use, the punching bag, if you will, the little cousin that you see twice a year that you just beat up on because you
have a big stiff arm in the family football game.
Yeah, I mean, there was going to be somebody that was just down and out from the beginning and could never climb out of the darkness. And South Carolina was not my pick, but that's exactly what they've become. 0-7 in conference play. They drop this one tonight. They'll drop below 500 on the season, Christian, as Georgia's favored by 7.5 at home. I like the Dogs here.
These two teams are a combined 2-12 in conference play, and all two wins coming with the Georgia Bulldogs. It's a place that Auburn has traveled to. It's a place that is not an easy place to play, which you saw earlier in the year. I think the free throw margins have evened out a little bit, and you've seen Georgia's record reflect
thankfully.
It. And
shocker how that works.
Right, yeah. But, again, with everything kind of falling apart, I want to do it. The heart wants
Don't
me to pick South
it.
Carolina.
Don't
the brain is telling me to pick the Georgia Bulldogs. I will pick the Dogs at home, favored by right around a touchdown. I want to do it, but I picked South Carolina – or somebody picked South Carolina to beat Mississippi State.
Yeah, I don't know who was that. I don't know who did that.
Done.
But what a crazy idea that would be.
I'll go with the Dogs as well.
I'll take South Carolina to cover. I think South Carolina keep it close. Look at their games. Look at their games in SEC play. Their last game against Mississippi State, 65-60. Florida, 79-69. Yeah, they let Oklahoma kind of embarrass them. They hung with Vandy by 3. They hung with Auburn by 3. Then they let Bama embarrass them, and they let Mississippi State embarrass them. But in half of their SEC games, they've literally been within one or two possessions.
Big statement. Big asterisk. How many of those games were at home for South Carolina?
The Mississippi State game was, the Florida game was, the Auburn game was.
And how many of those that you just mentioned were close games?
Yeah, all those. Now, they did, Alabama waxed them in Columbia, but the Vanderbilt game was on the road. 66-63 loss. That was in Nashville, which has become, apparently, an extremely tough place to play.
As Vanderbilt ranked for the first time in a long time in the top 25.
Yeah, they did make an appearance yesterday. You're right. I'll take South Carolina to cover, but I'll take Georgia to win the basketball game. Again, that one happening at 6 o'clock, same time as Kentucky and Tennessee. The nightcap in the SEC on the SEC network. Two teams who, man, I don't know if they're going in opposite directions. I don't know what they're doing. I really don't know what they are. Oklahoma is in College Station taking on top 15 Texas A&M. The Aggies are 15-5 on the year, CG, but they're 4-3 in conference play. Oklahoma, in terms of playing on the road, that's not really their strong suit, so they're going into a pretty hostile environment tonight at Reed Arena.
Yeah, Oklahoma's, they're only 1-2 on the road this year, which is wild to think. They've only played
three
road games all season long. Really, really weird to think about. But, oh man, Texas A&M coming off the heartbreak to your in-state rivals. You give up what feels like 100 points in the second half and allow Hook'em Horns and Matthew McConaughey to dance all over you in their home gym. I expect a big game out of Texas A&M. I think Buzz Williams is going to have those guys ready, and I'll take A&M. What's the cover line? 8.5? Yeah, I'll take the Aggies to roll tonight.
Oklahoma comes in on a two-game win streak, though. They have won back-to-back games for the first time in 2025. Remember, they started SEC play 0-4 They've since won two in a row. Now, I will say this. They've won two in a row against the two worst teams statistically, record-wise, in the Southeastern Conference. But a win's a win in this conference. You got to give credit where it's due.
You do.
A win is a win.
We've talked about it.
And I just... Tuesday night, late tip in Texas A&M. I don't trust Oklahoma. I don't trust them offensively to try and win this game. And if everybody's healthy and good to go for Texas A&M like I think they will be, I got the Aggies big.
Feels like one of those games you could look up and tune in where if the Kentucky-Tennessee game goes late and goes over to 8:15 or 8:20, they finally flip it over after a commercial break, or you finally change to it to two different networks, but you finally turn to it after the Kentucky-Tennessee game and it's 20-4. A&M's out in front, and you just immediately turn it right back off, and it just kind of sits at that line for the remainder of the game.
That Oklahoma team has been in the middle of some stupid runs, good and bad, in their last few games. They've been down by what seems like 15 or 20. They've been up by what seems are 15 or 20, and then they struggle to either keep it or get back in the game, whatever the case may be. I got A&M winning big tonight on the road at Texas A&M. So we both have all the home teams winning tonight. Tennessee over Kentucky, Georgia over South Carolina. I do have the Gamecocks to cover. And then we both have Texas A&M running away from Oklahoma. I think we both have, quickly, are you taking Kentucky to cover that 10.5 point spread in Tennessee? I am. I'm going to take Kentucky to cover 10.5, even without Lamont Butler.
Since you are... I will say they won't. I'll say Tennessee wins big.
Okay. All right. I respect it. I do. Well, we'll see what happens at SEC basketball. Let's go ahead and take our final break here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. When we come back, we'll plug our high school broadcast. Christian's on the road for Lee Scott. I'm on the road for Auburn High. We'll have that for you, tell you what you need to know, where you can find it, and how you can listen to all that coming up. And we'll wrap up the Tuesday edition of On the Line when we come back here on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
Winding down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It has been a great show today, man. We've had so much to go over. Lots of basketball conversation. Great college football stuff with Ryan Day. Always enjoy, you know, getting on to him a little bit. He's my favorite coach in college football. He coaches my favorite team in college football.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, in case you didn't know. Talked a lot of playoff stuff and college basketball. Do want to give us a chance, though, here quickly as we're winding up or wrapping up the show here. We both have a high school basketball broadcast tonight on the Auburn High Sports Network and on the Lee Scott Sports Network. You were on the road. You were taking on the Beulah Bobcats tonight. What do the people need to know about Lee Scott basketball tonight?
Yeah, so tonight's actually a really exciting night. Coming off of last night, I talked about it a little bit in the open, but a fantastic night inside Sanford Gymnasium last night. Lee Scott, both the varsity girls and the varsity boys defeat the Glenwood Gators in the rematch. So both of those teams, I guess all four teams now, varsity girls and varsity boys for both of those squads, have one loss in area play, and it's to each other.
That's awesome.
Lee Scott has one more game or one more area game tonight against Beulah. So talked about it all in the broadcast last night, so there is a little asterisk right now. But if Lee Scott, varsity girls, and varsity boys are able to take care of business tonight on the road at Beulah, Lee Scott forces a coin flip for the varsity girls and the varsity boys to essentially determine who will be crowned the area champion, who will host the area tournament. It will be one of those two teams, whether it be Lee Scott or Glenwood. But everything happened that needed to happen last night. A fantastic environment, emotional games. Warriors, that could arguably the biggest thing they have to avoid is the emotional letdown in a game like this tonight against an area foe. But Lee Scott, 13-11 on the varsity girls side of things, 21-4 the varsity boys for Lee Scott Academy. Both looking for wins tonight for the opportunity to host an area championship inside of Sanford Gymnasium. You can catch all the action. Tiger Country, 104.5, tigercountry.net. The Radio Alabama app is where you need to go if you want to tune back and forth between Auburn and Lee Scott Academy. Girls will tip right around 5:30, depending on how long the JV boys game goes before that. Varsity boys will be about 10 or 15 minutes following the conclusion for that one. So back-to-back nights of really exciting basketball. You can hear it in the voice, still trying to recover a little bit. So I wouldn't complain about a couple big Lee Scott Academy wins, saving myself for everything that's to come this weekend and into next week.
Yeah, so you're on the road at Beulah for Lee Scott. Again, as he said, Tiger Country 104.5 on the Lee Scott Sports Network. I am on the road for Auburn High School. We're on the road at Smith Station taking on the Panthers. This game and our games on Thursday are makeup games from the debacle, crazy weather from a week ago, right?
So you called that road, though, right?
Yeah,
the crazy snow this time.
Yeah, yeah. I said I totally called that we were going to get the blizzard that we did.
You went 1-for-2.
Yeah, I was. One. Hey, Hall of Fame, baby, Hall of Fame. Yes, we're on the road at Smith Station tonight. Second to last area games for Auburn High. The girls are 4-0 in area play. Area 4 in Class 7A. They have already clinched the area. They're good to go there. They could lose their next two and still be able to host that area tournament. But of course, head coach Courtney Pritchett and the girls do not want to do that. So they'll try to keep that undefeated streak going in area play. They'll begin at 5:30 on the road down there in Smith Station on 96.3 W Lee, 96.3 W LEE.com and that Radio Alabama app that Christian mentioned is the best way to get all of it. And then the varsity boys will be in action right around 7 o'clock, where Auburn High is 2-2 right now in area play, taking on the winless Smith Station Panthers in area play. As long as the Tigers take care of business, which they did already this season once. Same thing with the girls. If the boys can get a win tonight, they'll play an all-important game against Opelika on Thursday, where if the Tigers win, they'll secure the 2 seed. If they lose, it'll be a coin flip for the 3 seed because both teams will have the same record. They'll have the tiebreaker against each other each win, so that's kind of getting weird on that side of things in terms of the 2 and 3 seed, but Central boys have already clinched the area there.
If they were both 2 and 3, wouldn't they play each other regardless?
I think so. Yeah, so I don't think it matters. I don't know how they determine that. I need to look into that, but they would play, yeah, because one plays 4, and 2 plays 3 in the area tournament. So I guess it doesn't really matter. So yes, that is tonight. Again, Auburn and Smith Station on 96.3 W Lee, girls at 5:30 and boys at 7. And then we got Opelika coming up on Thursday. So really looking forward to that. So no excuse, no reason not to be tuned into any of our local high school coverage. And then postseason play for high school gets going next week for high school basketball. We'll run through the month of February. And then before you know it, baseball season will be here. I mean, the teams get going next month. And February 1 is this Saturday, for in case anybody hasn't looked at a calendar. Man. So pretty crazy. And Auburn University baseball gets going next month, too. Christian, it's pretty wild, man, that the fact that we've just rolled right through January and baseball season is pretty much here.
It feels like I should still be preparing for a Friday night for high school football. Now you feel like you're almost at the point of you're finishing up with basketball. And before you know it, the best time of the year will be here shortly, where the grass gets cut, the fresh smell and everything. Oh man, I'm excited. I can't wait for it.
Can't wait, but don't want the season on the hardwood to come to an end too quickly. Lee Scott Academy on the road, taking on Beulah, 5:30 on Tiger Country 104.5. Auburn High School on the road at Smith Station on 96.3 W Lee. We get going at 5:30 as well. We're back tomorrow, 2-4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Jordan Hill will join us at Dogs 247 and Double D. Daryl Dapridge for Double D Wednesdays. That's coming up right here tomorrow, 2-4 on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7. For Christian Griffin, I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.